Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, kidney disease, it can be life-threatening. It disproportionately affects the African-American community. There are measures to prevent, mitigate, and live with kidney disease. Tonight, we discuss those measures and more. It is a Medical Monday. The phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Are you suffering from kidney disease? Do you know someone who is? Are you caring for them? Do you have questions about it or what you can do to prevent it if it hasn't come on, and maybe you have a family history of kidney disease and you want a little bit more information? Tonight is the night to give us a call with your questions and your comments. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The doctor is in the house. Our doctor tonight is Dr. Keith Melanson. He's the professor of surgery at George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Science. He's the chief of the Division of Transplantation and the director of transplants at GW Hospital. So he knows a little bit about what he's talking about. Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Melanson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Bramante. I'm happy to be here.
For those who do not know what kidney disease is, tell us what it is, just the basics.
Well, the basics is that your kidneys have stopped functioning normally. There are five stages of kidney disease, and most people get diagnosed by stage three. They usually don't find out they have kidney disease until they're in stage three. But the long and short of it is, when you have kidney disease, your kidneys are not functioning normally. They are not filtering as they should. They're not getting rid of enough fluid. And this puts a lot of pressure on your heart and the vessels of your body, and that leads to an increased risk of heart attack and stroke and early death.
What causes kidney disease, Dr. Melanson?
Well, the top three causes of kidney disease are, in this order, diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity. There are other causes of kidney disease, but these are the top three, and usually patients with kidney disease may have a combination of one of those top three reasons.
And if you have all three, I take it that can really be lethal.
Absolutely. It's the number one reason why you have kidney disease is because people tend to have a combination of all three. It's one of the causes of early death, particularly in the African-American and Hispanic communities. Currently in this country, there is an epidemic of kidney disease. And if you are African-American, you have 4 to 5 times the risk of kidney disease as a white person.
Why is it so much higher among African-Americans, Native Americans, and Asian-Americans than whites?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Usually, the best answer to that question is diet. Our culture manifests as us eating a diet that tends to be higher in preservatives, higher in salt, higher in sugar. A diet high in salt and sugar and fat is going to increase your risk of high blood pressure, increase your risk of diabetes, and increase your risk of obesity.
So much of it is cultural.
Absolutely. You know, it's just too easy to try to make the argument that genetics is the reason why African Americans or Native Americans or Hispanic Americans have more of these issues. But mostly, to be perfectly honest, it's nothing more than culture. And culture has a lot to do with what we eat.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about kidney health, what you can do to make sure your kidneys stay healthy. And remember, you do have two of them, and you want both of them to be healthy. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Melanson, you mentioned genetics, but genetics can be tied to inheriting kidney disease. Is that correct?
It can be. You know, when I discuss this with my medical students, what the term I like to use rather than genetics is epigenetics. And the difference between genetics and epigenetics has to do with the fact that genes, that's genetics, right? So we all inherit genes, but we also inherit the proteins that connect to genes. The reason why epigenetics is more important than genetics is that these epigenetic phenomena can be influenced by our behavior. Genes really cannot, in the sense that genes can be what's called expressed or not expressed. They can be turned on or off. And the turning on or off of various genes has to do with epigenetics. In other words, if you come from a family where everyone seems to be obese, and then all of a sudden you become a marathon runner and you eat a different sort of diet and you do this year in and year out, you've just changed your epigenetics. Your genes never change, but your epigenetics did change. So that's why epigenetic phenomena is more important in inheriting these diseases than even genetics.
Very important point, doctor. Very important point. Let me ask you this before we go to our callers. You can have kidney disease, but not necessarily have kidney failure, correct? Talk a little bit about that, if I'm right in positioning it that way.
No, you're absolutely correct. Because, and it's a very important distinction, because, like I said earlier, there are five stages of kidney disease. Why are those five stages so important? Well, the first three stages can be reversible. Definitely the first two. Early stage three can be reversible. In other words, if you get diagnosed early and you make changes in your diet, changes in your behavior, you get rid of your high blood pressure, get rid of your diabetes, you can reverse your kidney disease. Kidney failure usually connotes the fact that you need renal replacement therapy. Renal replacement therapy is dialysis, mm-hmm, or transplantation. You don't need that until the very end, until you're at stage five. So you could have kidney disease and it be early and it's reversible, or you could have kidney failure. That's kidney disease that's gotten to a point where it's irreversible and you need renal replacement therapy.
Again, very, very important point, because I know that's always an issue. If you hear you have a disease, you know, can it be reversed? And so I think it's very important for our listeners to hear that. He is Dr. Keith Melanson, again, from George Washington University and George Washington Hospital, our guest tonight as we're talking about kidney health. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines. James is calling from Maryland. Go right ahead, James, with your question or comment.
Yes. My father had kidney disease, and I remember as a youngster when I would go with him to dialysis and we would play chess, and he would always say it went smoother when, you know, he had company. Mm-hmm. Now I'm 54, and I did have high blood pressure, and I just got diagnosed last year with type 2 diabetes. Actually, my blood pressure is low now, but yet I still have the type 2 diabetes. And I was wondering, what could I do to prevent having kidney failure or kidney disease?
Thank you so much, James.
Yes, James, that is a great question, and good of you to ask, because this is so very important to so many people in our community. The main thing you can do when you have a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes is, number one, lose weight. Even as little as 5 pounds makes a difference. But 10 pounds, 20 pounds is usually better if you could lose that amount of weight. So that's number one. Number two is activity. So even if you're not overweight, you know, some people, some type 2 diabetics are not obese, but they still have type 2 diabetes because of the fact that they're not exercising enough and their diet is still not a healthy diet. some people may not look fat, but they eat in a poor fashion. They eat a poor diet. So in order to influence your diabetes, what I would say, and reverse it, you need to change your diet. You want to decrease complex carbohydrates. You want to increase, you know, fruits and vegetables and water in your diet. You want to decrease fat in your diet. You want to become more active. So the easiest thing you can do is, like I said, lose weight if you can, and combine that with more activity. Even if the activity is just simply walking for an hour every day, that will cause your body to better utilize the stored sugar. And what type 2 diabetes is that you're overwhelming your body with sugar. So if you decrease the amount of sugar that's circulating in your blood, you're not overwhelming your body and your diabetes can go away.
All right. Thank you so much for your question, James, and best of luck on your journey. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our conversation tonight is about our kidneys, how to keep them healthy, and if we have kidney disease, how to stop from getting kidney failure. And if you do have kidney failure, what you can do to basically stay alive. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810 is our phone call. Dr. Melanson, I've had someone close to me who was on dialysis, and there are folks out there who know that they need dialysis but will not go or have not gone. And we know that there are folks who are on dialysis, come off, and then go to work right after they finish their dialysis. So what is the issue that you've seen with dialysis, and is it particular to a certain community who may push back on getting dialysis, even knowing that they need it?
Yes. You know, Bramante, I similarly had a family member who pretty much refused dialysis after she needed it and eventually died of her kidney disease. Because once you get to the point, for most people, that where you need dialysis, if you don't get it regularly, it will overwhelm your body, and the toxins will cause your body to fail, and that is sad. Some people tolerate dialysis better than others, primarily because of the changes that they make in their diet, and therefore their bodies function better, even though they're at the point of needing dialysis. Let me give you an example. If you follow the diet that the doctors tell you, once you get to the point of kidney failure, what's going to happen is you're less likely to have a buildup of phosphorus, a buildup of potassium in your blood. And these are the toxins that build up that causes fatigue, that causes your heart to stop. That, you know, one of the reasons why people die when they need dialysis is because the potassium level in their blood rises to such a level that it stops the heart. Very high potassium is what we use to stop the heart in heart surgery. It's called cardioplegia. So the reason why some people tolerate it better is because they have better diets. They're eating foods that's low in potassium, low in phosphorus. They're staying away from fast food. They're staying away from soda. Sodas have a lot of phosphorus, particularly dark sodas like Coca-Cola. Or colas. So that's why some people tolerate it better. They don't drink as many fluids in between dialysis sessions. So you can take two people that's in kidney failure, and one person can feel a lot better and look a lot better because of the diet. But it is a death sentence. If you need dialysis, if you're at the point that you're on dialysis and you don't go for one or two or three treatments, you're probably going to die.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight it is a Medical Monday, and we are focusing on our kidneys, how to make sure we keep them healthy And if they aren't quite as healthy as we want them to be, how we can reverse that or at least stabilize it. So an important conversation tonight, 202-319-7810. We're going to take a break, but we're going to continue this conversation. Denise, BJ, and Lillian on the phone line. Stay right there. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3, HD2, and 98.3. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I am Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment, and tonight we're focusing on our health, specifically talking about our kidneys, keeping them healthy and strong as best we can. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, Dr. Keith Mellison. He's a professor of surgery at George Washington School of Medicine and Health Sciences, the chief of the Division of Transplantation and director of transplants at GW Hospital. Let's go back to those phone lines. Now, Lillian has been waiting patiently, calling from Annapolis. Go right ahead, Lillian.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call. My five siblings died from kidney disease, and I was fortunate enough to get a transplant. But there are, you know, criteria that you have to meet before they'll do the transplant. And a lot of the people that I went to dialysis with were not... they didn't want to do any of the criteria. Is there any way that you can convince a person to, you know, just go with what the doctor says and try and get the transplant? Because I've been living with it since 2013, and, you know, it's a lot better than going to dialysis every other day.
All right. Thank you so much, Lillian. Dr. Mellison?
Lillian, and, you know, first of all, people like you are the best poster children that we could ever have for transplantation, because you made that move and you got the transplant and your life has been extended as a result of that. And I know what you're talking about, where there are patients who are on dialysis and they don't want to or fail to go through all of the effort that it takes in order to become a transplant candidate and to receive a transplant. And one of the reasons is, you know, it's a good and a bad thing. You know, in this country, we make dialysis access absolutely universal. Any person with kidney disease can get dialysis in this country, and that's unique in the world. And it's because through our Congress, they passed legislation going back to the 1960s to make it where every American citizen, or even the people that are not actual citizens of this country, if you are in this country and you need dialysis, you will get immediate access to dialysis. They pay a lot of money for it, and they get what they pay for. We have excellent dialysis services for anyone that needs it. For transplant, it's a little bit different. Although the funds are there, it's a lot more difficult because it's a limited commodity. So the patients have to take the initiative. They have to be much more aggressive and proactive about their own health care. Unlike dialysis, where they can be passive, and I mean, the dialysis centers will actually go to their homes and pick them up and bring them in. So you don't have to be as active, and that's why patients don't want to go through all of the effort it takes to get a transplant. But what they need to understand, and this is how we try to educate the community, is that your lifestyle and your life expectancy both increase exponentially when you get transplanted, usually. People are much happier, like you are, Lillian, and are much healthier and live a lot longer, in the order of decades more if they could receive a transplant. But they have to follow the recommendations, and they have to follow the rules, and they have to get the testing done. And it is a bit of an effort, but they have to do it. Otherwise, they will not get in the line, because the line is long. There are over 100,000 people waiting for kidney transplants, and we do about 25,000 per year. Mm-hmm. So most people will not be able to get transplanted unless they have a loved one or a friend that can donate to them, and they definitely cannot be transplanted if they don't get in that line and be proactive about their own health care.
Thank you so much, Lillian, and thank you for sharing your story. Dr. Mellison, I want to follow up on that for a minute. Number one, is it only one quarter of those on the list get a transplant because there's not a match? Is that why you can only do 25,000 of the 100,000 that are on the list?
Well, no, it's not because they don't get a match. It's just because there's not enough organs to go around all the people that need them.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, the only way to get a transplant is for, unless you have a live donor, is for someone to die. And then, like you said, Ramondi, you have to match them. But the match goes by who got in the line first. So usually what has to occur is that you have to be in that line for a period of years. And it in the Washington, D.C. area, or in the Baltimore area, it's going to be 5 to 6 years that you have to be in that line. In the New York area or the California area, you need to be in that line even longer. And the problem is, people start to die after they're on dialysis after about 4 to 5 years. So you need to be in the line 5 to 6 years in D.C., 9 to 10 years in New York, 11 to 12 years in Los Angeles. Well, you can see that most of those people won't survive. That's why the earlier you get into that line, the better. And it's also why if you have a loved one or a friend that wants to donate to you, that's the way to skip the line.
Well, that was my next question. That I remember the basketball great Oscar Robertson, I think he gave one of his kidneys to his daughter. And so that's what I was going to ask you. If there's a family member or friend that you're connected to or there's a match, then you don't have to sort of do that line thing. And the last thing before we go back to the phone lines is this, and I think it's important to know, we've got two kidneys, so you can live with just one, correct? And can you live just as vibrantly, or is there some downside if you are a healthy person and you give one of your kidneys? What does that mean for the person who gives up one of his kidneys?
That's a great point, and you're absolutely right about Oscar Robertson. And I did meet him after he donated to his daughter. You are correct, and he continues to do well. Here's the thing: you can donate your kidney, and you would be perfectly normal if your kidney function is normal and you are in good health. So that's why we are able to take one kidney from a person and give it to someone else. People that are donors actually tend to do better than typical Americans health-wise after they donate, because we only choose people that are in very good condition and that are very healthy. The way God made us, Bramande, is that we have a spare. We have a spare kidney. So there's nothing untoward that will happen to you if you're healthy and you donate one of your kidneys.
Great information. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about kidney health tonight. It's a medical Monday. Let's go back to the phone lines. BJ calling from Germantown. Go right ahead, BJ, with your question or comment.
To give me this opportunity, I don't drink alcohol. I never smoke in my life, but I just drink coffee 4 times a day. No sugar. I just squeeze a lemon, and also I pee a lot. What is the impact to my a future kidney?
So you're not having kidney problems right now. You just want to know by what you're doing, what's the impact of drinking a lot of coffee, pretty much.
Yes.
Is there an impact there, Dr. Mellison? Does that have any
kind
of...
Yeah, that's a very good question, BJ. And, you know, the only thing I would tell you is that coffee is a diuretic, so it will make you urinate more than, say, an equivalent amount of water. So I would tell you that you should stay well hydrated above whatever you drink in coffee. So you should drink a lot of water as well. You like lemon in your coffee, you should put lemon in your water, and because lemon is great. It helps to acidify your urine and decrease infection. So I totally support what you're doing. I drink lots of coffee myself. It's totally good for you and quite healthy. Like I said, the only issue is that it is a diuretic, so you want to drink a lot of water in order not to become dehydrated. But I think it sounds like whatever you're doing is very healthy. You're not drinking alcohol. You're drinking lots of coffee. You put lemon in it. You're making lots of urine. I think it sounds like you're doing well.
Thank you, BJ. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Back to the phone lines we go. Denise is calling from Baltimore. Go right ahead, Denise.
Yes. 10 years ago, I had protein in my urine. And now it's back, and I'm trying to figure out where did it come from, or how can it be cured, or is there a cure for it? Because I go to a kidney doctor, but he states that the levels is not high enough to give any medication for. So I'm trying to find out, is there anything that I could do to make it go away again?
Denise, that's a very good question. And, you know, when we go out in the community and screen people for kidney disease, one of the tests we look for is protein in the urine, because that can be an early sign of kidney disease. However, protein in the urine can be normal for some people, but the question you need to ask your doctor, you're seeing a doctor, would be, is the protein that you're seeing in your urine the normal variant or the abnormal variant? There are two types of protein that can be seen in the urine. So, and the question would be, do you have albumin in your urine? If you have albumin in your urine, then that is a sign of kidney disease. Whereas if you don't have albumin in your urine, if you have other proteins in your urine, then that's a normal variant, and it could be seen by the diet that you're eating and even by strenuous exercise. I don't know if you do a lot of aerobic exercising or bike riding, kickboxing. Any sort of aerobic exercise can increase the protein, the healthy protein in your urine, or like I said, just eating a high-protein diet sometimes can increase the protein. But you are correct to be concerned, and the doctor should be able to tell you, hey, Denise, this type of protein in your urine is the normal variant, and it's transient, and your kidney function is otherwise totally normal. A doctor should be able to tell you the difference.
Thank you so much.
Okay. He did tell me that it wasn't normal this time. The last time I had it 10 years ago, it was normal. So
okay.
Is there
okay.
any way?
All right. So then, good. That's the next point. So when you have the abnormal variant, which now it sounds like you do have, the answer to that is similar to the question that was asked by the gentleman earlier, you know, with the type 2 diabetes. There's something that's injuring your kidneys. Most probably, when you have protein in your urine, it's called hyperfiltration. And hyperfiltration is most likely caused by two things, or three things. It's the same three things that leads to kidney disease, right? It's number one, high blood pressure. Number two, diabetes. And number three, obesity. So are one or all of these issues problems for you?
I don't have none of that. I'm not high. I don't have. Only thing I have is high cholesterol. I don't have high blood sugar. I don't have high heart trouble. I don't have any of that.
Okay. Well, then that means that you definitely need to see a kidney specialist, if that's who you're seeing, and they need to do more of a workup, because then you are in that rare situation of you don't have the typical causes of kidney disease. So there's something that's affecting your kidneys. You may need a kidney biopsy. This can be safely done, but you need a diagnosis. And if it's not, if what you're saying is correct, and I believe you, then that means you're not falling in any of the normal categories. You're in the more rare categories of what could be an actual genetic cause of a kidney dysfunction or what's called a autoimmune sort of kidney issue. These are rare things I don't talk about usually as much, but you need a workup by a kidney specialist.
All right. Well,
I've had a workup. They don't know what it is. They can't figure it out neither.
Have you had a biopsy?
I had a biopsy. They done everything, and they don't know where it's coming from. I had blood work done. They said that it's not bad enough for them to put me on no medications. It's not. The level is like 1,000. They say when it get to 3,000, then there's a problem. But it's not there.
Well, there are medicines that you could give, and I don't want to go into all these details, but you should come to GW, and I can help you get your problem addressed.
All right. Well, good luck, Denise, and take the doctor up. He's at George Washington Hospital. I know you're out in Baltimore, but, you know, 295 will bring you here. So best of luck with that. And again, I would take the doctor up and coming in to see him. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The phone lines are open, but we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and continue this conversation. I want to talk to the doctor about medications that can cause damage to your kidneys. What are those medications? More questions for the doctor, and if you have them, give us a call. Sandra, stay right there on the line. You will be next right after this quick timeout. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. It's a Medical Monday. Tonight we're talking about kidney health. Dr. Melanson, I wanted to ask you about damage that can happen to your kidneys from the use of medications. Number one, is that correct? And are there particular medications that we're talking about?
Yes, Bramante, absolutely. The medicines that we are most concerned about when it comes to kidney health would be what we call non-steroidal medications, very common medicines like ibuprofen, like Advil. These medications, when taken for a prolonged period of time, decrease the blood flow to the kidneys and can cause kidney disease. And as you know, these medicines are very commonly taken in by the public. Again, you can take ibuprofen or Advil, and it did not be a problem. The problem comes from people that really abuse the medication. And I'm talking about taking it more than 4 or 5 times a day for greater than 1 or 2 weeks in a stretch. When you're taking those sorts of medicines for that period of time, you can absolutely cause kidney disease. I've had numerous patients who have abused non-steroidal medicines for years and have caused kidney damage. The other medicines are also very commonly utilized, would be antibiotics. Now, the good thing about antibiotics is that you normally are taking antibiotics for a very short period of time, only 1 week or 2 weeks at the most. So it's usually a transient issue if it's an issue at all. The problem comes from people that take antibiotics for prolonged periods of time, like people that have chronic infections, like some women in particular will have chronic urinary tract infections, and they take antibiotics for months and months at a time. That can cause kidney issues. And then the third area, which is a really problematic area that we're seeing more and more issues with, are over-the-counter herbal medicines. People seem to believe that for some reason, herbal medicine is not medicine. Well, herbal medicine is medicine. Even though it's not vetted by the FDA, these herbal medicines can cause problems. And there are various different herbs that, when taken for long stretches of time, can cause kidney dysfunction. So people need to be wary of what they put into their bodies. Now, if it's something benign like vitamins that you can take over the counter, usually those, particularly if they're water soluble, are not going to be an issue. But there's a lot of various herbal medicines for some people that can be an issue, because what people don't realize is that they can have allergies that only show up in their kidneys. In other words, you know, we know what hay fever and dust allergies and things like that nature are, because you sneeze and cough and whatnot. But there are allergies that only show up in your kidneys and can manifest by causing kidney problems, even kidney failure, if you keep taking these medicines. But those are the top three agents that we see causing problems, other than the more typical things like blood pressure medicine sometimes can be an issue. But these are the top three areas, problem areas, that we are seeing in our practices recently.
Still a few more minutes to get in your questions for Dr. Mellison. Phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone line. Sandra calling from the Commonwealth. Go right ahead, Sandra.
Thank you for having this topic. I really need it. Okay, so I am obese. I'm 5'7", 250 pounds. I have high blood pressure, diabetes, sleep apnea. I take lisinopril, HCTZ, and amlodipine for my high blood pressure, and it has kept it at a normal range. So it hasn't really been high lately. Mm-hmm. But with that thought, I'm going to ask you about the longevity of taking that on the kidneys. Also, in the summertime, I get a yeast buildup, and I'm sure that's from diabetes. But is there anything I can do for that? I've been trying to do so many different things. I feel like I'm turning in a circle. I'm spinning my tail, like chasing my tail, because I'm trying to diet, and I'll try to cut out different things. But I'm such a meat eater, and I get sweet cravings at night, that I go back to what I know, you know, like an ice cream cone or something at night when I get these sweet cravings, or, you know, something sweet. And then, you know, I'm a big meat eater, so I love meat. And I was trying to do Dr. Sebi, you know, he was saying cut out meat, cut out dairy. I'm like, if I just cut these things out, I'll be a lot better. Why can't I cut these things out? It's so frustrating.
Well, let's give Dr. Mellison a chance maybe just kind of sort of drill down to what your question was. And I think it's, you know, if he had some advice on what you can do to help combat. And it sounds like she's got those three things that you talked about, Dr. Mellison.
Yeah.
That are critical.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, let me first state right off that your issues are very, very common. So this is not that unusual, and it can be complex. But let me start at the top. The yeast problem that you're having, I think, definitely is because of the diabetes. And just like when I answered the gentleman earlier, so that's the first thing you need to tackle. The way to tackle that is increasing your activity. Like I said, it could be as simple as walking, swimming. It's, you know, summer's coming. You just want to increase your activity, and then you need to change your diet. I, like you, I sometimes get sweet cravings. That's perfectly normal and natural. But the question is how you deal with them. And instead of, you know, ice cream or sugary sweets, you should try fruit. They're all, you know, depending on what fruit that you like. You might like pineapple, you might like mangoes, whatever. But that's a much healthier way to deal with a sweet craving, because, you know, the way fruit was made, and I'm talking about fruit, not fruit juice, but fruit is made with a natural barrier between the sugar and the sugar rush. And the natural barrier is fiber. So unlike, say, eating ice cream, if you have a pear, your body has to chew through all this fiber to get all of that sugar. And that's why it's much, much healthier for us than the sugar rush that we get from a candy bar or from other manufactured sweets. So I think that would be a way to better deal with your cravings. And like I said, you need to increase your activity. The medicines that you are taking for your blood pressure, I actually think, sounds like they're doing a good job, and there's not really a downside in the medicines in and of themselves, particularly if they're effective. And they sound like they're being effective in treating your blood pressure. So your blood pressure currently is controlled. You may be able to decrease your medicines if you lost weight and increased your activity. But I think that one issue, your blood pressure, is being addressed. The other issues to deal with and these twin terrors will be addressed with one activity, which is increasing your activity, number one, and then number two, by changing your diet. The third thing I would tell you is increasing water, because the more water you drink, it will cleanse your body, and it'll also decrease these cravings, because the one thing that water does for us is that it helps to fill our stomach, particularly when we're eating. One of the habits I've tried to get into is you get to the restaurant or sit at home and drink water, you know, or even have a liquid part, like soup. Now, soups in restaurants have a lot of salt, but if you make a soup at home, when you put liquids in your stomach before you eat solids, it forces you to eat less because of the way your stomach has to contort to have liquid and solid inside of it. So that's a little trick in that you could do to decrease the amount of food that you're eating. The fact that you like to eat meat is okay, but you should try to eat leaner cuts of meat. So that would mean the leaner cuts of beef, like a filet or a New York strip rather than a porterhouse or a ribeye. Or you may have a turkey or other types of lean meat rather than fatty meats like pork or ham or the fattier cuts of meat. So you can have meat. If you crave meat, that's okay. But what you want to do is you want to try to change out your diet and introduce more fruits and vegetables, particularly
Dr. Mellison, I'm going to jump in just real quick here because I think we've gotten Sandra a pretty good sort of background on what she needs. And I know we have a couple other callers I want to try to squeeze in here before we run out. Okay. Hopefully we can get both in. But I want to go to James very quickly, James, with your question or comment. If you could hit it pretty quickly and succinctly, we'd appreciate it.
Hello, how you all doing this evening?
Good.
Quick question. I have an uncle. He's been on dialysis patient for at least about 7 years. Is there like a time, is there a life expectancy for people who's on a dialysis machine that much or that long?
Thank you so much, James. Dr.
Amelson? Yeah. So your uncle stayed alive for 7 years. That's good. It means that he must be being pretty compliant with his diet and his activities. So I've seen people survive 25, 30 years on dialysis as long as they're compliant with what the doctors tell them.
Thank you so much, James. Joanne, I'm sorry. I don't think we're going to be able to get to you because we're running out of time. The music's playing, so we appreciate, though, that you called in and from Tennessee. He is Dr. Keith Mellison, professor of surgery at George Washington School of Medicine and Health Science, chief of the Division of Transplantation and director of transplants at George Washington Hospital. Dr. Mellison, thank you so much. Just great, great information, and I'm sure it has helped our callers and our listeners who've been with us tonight. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't get all the calls, but we'll have to come back.
We got them all but one, so you did a great job, Dr. Mellison. That's the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, May 9th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night, and happy birthday to Blake.